Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, November 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from Dr. Sarkino and McGuire, podiatrists with offices in Greenwich, New York and Bennington, Vermont. Surgery for the foot and ankle, nyfootsurge.com for more information. Joining us today for Medical Monday is Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. He's on the line to discuss dental care and answer your dental hygiene questions. If you do have a question of that nature, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. David Mottola and your dentistry calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. He's on the line to answer your dental care questions. Dr. Mottola earned his DDS from the University of Maryland Dental School in 2005, completed a postgraduate fellowship in geriatric dentistry at the University of Maryland in 2006. Dr. Mottola has treated patients at his private practice in Cohoes since 2009. He's a member of the American Dental Association, the New York State Dental Association, and the current president of the New York State 3rd District Dental Society. If you have a question for Dr. Mottola, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. David Mottola, welcome back to the show.
Ray, how are you? Thank you.
Great to have you back on the program with us. Over the course of the past year, year and a half, we have talked to many doctors who have lamented the fact that the COVID pandemic kept many people from getting regular screenings and testings and various other procedures that really should have been done. They put them off. Right. Now that we appear to be turning the corner on the pandemic, and I'll knock wood here, did you notice the same sort of thing with people getting cleanings?
Well, we did. In fact, during the pandemic, from March until June, last year, we were actually closed to all preventive care. So and that was a New York State Department of Health mandate. So the dental offices, we weren't doing any preventive care. So we were treating patients for emergencies. And but however, there was some reluctancy even in June when we were opening back up for preventive care. But we found here in my office, at least, that the demand was quite high. I mean, people were eager to get back into the office. We had quite a backlog because, you know, for 3 months of being closed for preventive care, in our office, it was almost 1,200 patients. So we had to, you know, reschedule them and we book, you know, several months out. So we were already booked, and then we had to find appointments for all the people who were put off. So it took us a while to catch up, and I would imagine other offices had the same challenges. But we found people were eager to come back. They were comfortable. We had, you know, we went above and beyond from a PPE and an infection control standpoint. So we found people were comfortable, but it did take a while, at least logistically, to get a lot of people back in.
You know, there's the logistical aspect and the PPE aspect. There's also the emotional aspect. And one thing I've noticed with many a service industry and doctors and dentists and everything else is some people are still, and probably rightfully so, a little skittish about being there. What do you do to allay those fears when someone comes in the office?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And we've been trying to be very communicative with patients. So, you know, we have the website, and then we had just trying to inform people of the steps that we were taking from infection control. We were up to date with CDC and the New York State Department of Health guidelines. In the very beginning, we had a little more PPE than we've had now. The research has shown that, you know, our masks, our gloves, our eye safety has is effective in preventing transmission, much like it is with HIV and other viruses. So, you know, HIV back in the 80s really changed the way we did our infection control here in dental offices and probably other disciplines as well. But so we try to let patients know what we're doing. When you come in, the first thing you do is we take the your temperature still. We ask a series of questions. We hope that we're able to show and communicate that, first of all, we take it seriously, and that, secondly, people, we're taking the steps to keep patients and ourselves safe.
Dr. David Mottola joins us from Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. The number to call on this Medical Monday is 800-348-2551. And Dr. Mottola, let's grab a call or two or three before the first break. Christine is in Albany. Christine, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Mottola.
Hello.
Thanks for being on. Hi. Thanks for being on. I have a 93-year-old grandmother, my grandmother, who's way overdue for a dental cleaning. I have two questions. Do dental hygienists ever do in-home cleaning? And the other question is, my grandmother is saying that her teeth feel soft lately, and she's afraid to chew certain foods for fear that her teeth might crumble or something might happen. And just wondering if you've ever heard someone describe that before.
Thank you. Yes, I have. Let me first answer your first question with regard to home visits. There are dentists who have mobile dentistry, and they will typically have some sort of, mobile suction or X-ray units, things like that, where they can treat people. Now, oftentimes these mobile dentistry, they will go to like a skilled nursing facility or a housing where there's, many people to be seen at once. Certain dentists, I do not do home care. Not that I haven't here and there and established patients gone to their homes to help out, typically, an elderly person. But it's not part of our scope. But there are dentists who do that. Now, in the Albany region, I would say you could refer you to the there's a Third District Dental Society, the New York State Dental Association. They may have a list of providers who are willing to do or able to do home care. And then secondly, with regard to your mother's feeling or concern, it's funny. Some people they can feel that maybe, geez, their teeth aren't quite as strong as they used to be. It may just be, a concern she has just because she hasn't been in the dentist in a while. So, I can't say, she's in danger of them breaking, obviously, without examining her. But, sometimes we will get that often when people say, geez, they just don't quite feel as strong. And sometimes it's just because inflammation. And sometimes when the gum is inflamed, they haven't had teeth clean in a while. You can have that sensation. They may have a loose tooth that moves when they bite and chew and so on. So, I think it is important and relevant that she, if you guys could, I don't know, is she homebound? Is she ambulatory or?
She is ambulatory, but it's difficult because we have an in-home chairlift inside and an outdoor chairlift, and
right.
We're taking her for a surgical procedure tomorrow for the dermatologist. So it's hard for her to get out without getting exhausted. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why I was looking into maybe possible in-home. So I will check with the New York State Dental Association, like you recommend.
Yeah, and maybe Senior Services of Albany, they might have resources as well.
Thanks, Christine, for the call. By the way, when I was writing up your script for today, Dr. Mottola, I noticed that you're the current president of the New York State Third District Dental Society. What is that?
Well, Roy, okay, right. I'm the past president. So, full disclosure is it's a 1-year term. But essentially, the New York State Dental Association is divided into districts. So, in our area, The 3rd District Dental Society serves Rensselaer and Albany counties and a number of other counties, mostly south. So 4th District is like Saratoga County and mm-hmm. Schenectady County. And so, but what we do, our purpose is to provide guidance and services to not only practicing dentists, member dentists, but also to citizens and patients within those districts. So to take it a step further, the American Dental Association, it's tripartite. So it's 3 parts. It's the American Dental Association, and then the New York State Dental is the 2nd, and then the New York State Dental is divided into districts. So, so that's what we just provide counseling and resources and try to promote the profession and communication. And we were certainly active during COVID with making sure that the, you know, it was accurate information that people could use, practical information that they could use. So that's our purpose.
Let's take a quick break. Dr. David Mottola joins us from Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. It's a Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551. Vox Pop, it's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you, and the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. David Mottola joins us from Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes. You know I wasn't going crazy, doctor. I went to the website the other day, the 3rd District Dental Society website. I think you're still listed as the president, so maybe you need a little extra money there.
They may not. The IT department may be just behind a little bit there, but
Otherwise, there's got to be another stipend for Dr. Mottola somewhere, right?
Say that again?
Otherwise, there's got to be another stipend there for you.
Yes, that's right. I'm still waiting for my first payment. But.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Cynthia is in Marbleton. Cynthia, you're on.
Yeah, hi, doctor. I have this ongoing thing with a molar that broke years ago, and so my old dentist put a cap on it, but immediate pain, and I had it removed after 3 years because of constant pain. He had not done a root canal, so he did a root canal. Then he put a cap on again, so the 2nd cap. And I've just always had pain when I eat, and occasionally I've had, like, I think some tooth infections, you know, where I needed an antibiotic. But I'm kind of in that same position again where the pain is really intense. I don't really know what type of dentist I should actually go to for this because I don't understand what phantom pain is, and it's real and it really hurts and don't know what to do.
So just to clarify, the tooth is still there, but it's had a root canal and crown?
They did a root canal, and there's a cap over it. So, yeah.
Yes, right. So the tooth can often be painful after a root canal. Is it primarily the biting pressure? Is that primarily when it bothers you?
Yeah, pressure on the top part. Yes. It's years of this now, you know, and lots of money.
So you know, without looking at you and x-raying and so on, we'll make a few assumptions over the phone here. But to be honest with you, it sounds like the tooth likely has a fracture. Okay, so and that may have been the problem from day one. So, and the fracture typically in this case would be up under the gum on the root part of the tooth because the anatomy of the tooth, the roots are up under the gum, right? And then you have the crown part of the tooth where the crown sits over it. So more likely than anything, there's a fracture below the gum on the root part. Those are very
difficult. So they should probably remove the whole tooth, I would think.
Yeah. Typically speaking, that's and then you can look into maybe an implant or some other form of replacing the tooth if you decide to do that. But just based on your description, it sounds like likely the root has a fracture, which would make it essentially not fixable.
Thank you. Because it was from the moment you know that a cap was done, like it's going on a decade.
Yeah,
now.
And the so problem with fractures is they're very hard to see on a traditional X-ray, and oftentimes your symptoms are consistent with a tooth infection. So you know, sometimes you kind of go through the gamut of treatment, root canal, crown, and it still is bothersome. But what you're describing is very typically a fracture of the root of the tooth.
Okay, because, I thought I was going a little crazy with, you know, saying how much pain I was always in.
Not at all.
Trying to find, you know, I love my dentist in the city, but I'm trying to find a dentist up here who can help.
Doctor, what do you do in Cynthia's case? You have to pull the whole thing and just put an implant in?
Well, yeah, so typically, well, first of all, you would, if it is a root fracture, you would pull the tooth. And then from a replacement standpoint, one, you would decide if you can replace it, if you want to replace it. But ideally, you would replace it with a dental implant, which is a post, right? And then you can attach a crown. So it's like a single tooth replacement.
My husband's gone through that beautiful process.
Oh, God. All right, Cynthia, thank you for the call. Dr. David Mottola joins us on this Medical Monday. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Jim is in Matamoros. Jim.
Well, chronically fractured teeth likely lead to periodontal disease. And what is the most effective antibiotic for Porphyromonas and treponema in the duration of treatment?
Okay. I'm sorry. Can you I didn't quite get all of the questions there. Can you what was the first part of your question?
Well, chronically fractured teeth lead to periodontal disease was Jim's first question.
Well, I mean, the fracture themselves, not necessarily, but if multiple teeth are chronically fracturing, then there could be certainly multiple factors involved here. But let's say they're under a lot of pressure or they have larger fillings. It wouldn't be a direct cause and effect, but certainly a periodontal disease diagnosis could be associated with someone who is, you know, frequently breaking their teeth. That would certainly depend on a few different clinical factors.
Okay. Jim, what was the second part of your question? Slowly.
What is the most effective antibiotic for Porphyromonas and treponema and the duration of treatment that would be involved?
Did you catch any of that, Doc?
Yeah. Well, so from an antibiotic standpoint, so it wouldn't typically antibiotics in dentistry are used for acute type pain and infection. So a systemic antibiotic for like generalized periodontal disease, typically we don't do. Now you know if someone has again an acute infection, you may do amoxicillin, a penicillin BK. So penicillin-based antibiotic is oftentimes most effective. It depends on the type of bacteria. So what bacteria you find in the mouth, the penicillins are typically very effective against cephalosporins. If you have a penicillin allergy, there's azithromycin can be effective. So, but there are localized periodontal not systemic, but locally applied antibiotics. But it does depend on the scenario. But so I don't know if that answered his question.
Well, Jim, thank you very much for the call. Dr. David Mottola joins us on this Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll check the email bag in just a little bit. Mark is in Russell, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Mottola. I just had a crown come off of a tooth that had a cavity underneath it. And, of course, my dentist is gone for the week, so I'm sort of left hanging here. But he does want to put – I think he wants me to go with an implant, and I kind of wanted to find out what's involved in having an implant done.
Yeah, so that's a very popular option. But really, when you make the type of decision like that is, you know, your dentist probably doesn't feel that just replacing a the crown is a great long-term treatment option. So the cavity may have extended below the gum or in a way that he doesn't feel that just redoing a crown would be viable long-term. The advantage of implants is that they have a very high success rate and a very successful long-term prognosis. So what they are specifically is they're typically titanium and they're a post. So they replace the tooth. So the tooth would come out. That area would have to heal, okay? The bone and the gum, sometimes that takes several months. Then you could put the implant, would be placed. And then again, that takes several months typically to heal. And then you can, what you do with the implant is there is there's a part of the gum. You would then attach a crown to the implant. So the process itself can take several months. However, they are very successful and they have a very good long-term prognosis. So, you know, at the end of the day, they're a very good treatment option.
Is there a space where the tooth was that so I have to basically eat over that space?
Yeah, usually. I mean, if let's say the tooth is in the front, oftentimes we'll make an interim prosthesis, we call it. So it would be, you know, a false tooth, essentially, you would use during that healing period on front teeth. On back teeth, that's done less often. And typically on back teeth, at least within my practice, we often just leave it, let the gum heal. Yeah, and you could chew on it. That's fine. You're not going to do damage to it. So yeah, in the back teeth, typically we leave it.
Mark, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Regarding implants, I have never had an implant, but I always wondered, if you have to eat, your teeth have nerves in them, right? And so there is some feedback that you get when you bite into something. You can feel it with your teeth. Do people experience issues chewing and eating when they have dental implants?
No. They act just like, I would say they function just like your teeth would in chewing up food and so on. But no, there's very little sensation or pain or anything. They can withstand, you know, hundreds of pounds of pressure. So no, we typically, and they don't fracture. Very, very low percentage of fracture rates or anything like that with implants. So no, people chew without pain and they chew fine. It's not like it's an abnormal feeling or anything. Like they're chewing, like it feels different than the other teeth would when they eat.
Dr. David Mottola joins us from Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York on this Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to Kathleen in Utica. Kathleen, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. Doctor, I have a question. A 25-year-old woman that I know of 4 years ago had a odontogenic tumor. And now, 4 years later, she's had an X-ray of her jaw, and there are four new growths or tumors around that area. I'm wondering what dental school or dental surgery operation would you recommend? I'm concerned about having this perhaps something that's rather unusual handled by I would like her to go to the most skilled place possible, and that's
right.
What I'm asking for, a recommendation.
Well, I would say in general, the place where I would refer would be an oral surgeon. Okay. Now, you're in Utica, so I don't, you know, my patients are in the Albany area, so I don't typically refer to Utica, but I'm sure there are many very able-bodied and very good oral surgeons in the Utica area, but that's the type of dental specialist that she should be seen by is an oral surgeon. You know, again, you could reach out to the District Dental Society there, New York State Dental Association, but or even, you know, the general dentist should have referral, be able to refer to a good oral surgeon that they know and trust.
Kathleen.
Okay, well, and you feel that, I mean, I don't have a name for this tumor, and I don't know if these four new little growth are related necessarily, but do you feel that she should go to a research place or a dental medical school? Or
well, not necessarily. The surgeon, if they felt that it was out of their scope of practice or expertise, then that would, they would then, you know, maybe send her to an oncologist, specialized mm-hmm. hospital. But yeah, so but I think the first step is a dental oral surgeon.
Okay, Kathleen, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. David Mottola joins us on this Medical Monday. And let's see who has been waiting the longest. James in Beacon. James, you're on.
Hey, Doc. I got a question about a root canal. Years ago, I had my rear molar crack on a olive pit, and I didn't get the crack taken care of as fast as I should have, and a cavity was created, and my doctor said it was pretty deep, and eventually that led to a root canal. So for some time that root canal seemed fine, but eventually the doctor insisted that that root canal would be a problem for me and that should be replaced. So an implant of some sort. So my question is, how long can a tooth with a root canal sustain, and can that tooth remain for years upon years, or would a tooth with a root canal eventually fail in that an infection would ensue or there'd be some problem that would lead towards an implant?
Well, so just because a tooth had a root canal doesn't mean it has a specific lifespan, right? So a root canal in of itself doesn't mean, well, you're only going to get 20 years max out of a tooth that had a root canal. What root can, the teeth that have root canals, sometimes they'll have a higher failure rate than teeth that haven't had a root canal, because one, they may have had a crack that initiated the need for the root canal. In other words, that may have let the infection in the first place. They're also more brittle. After a root canal, you lose your blood supply to the tooth. Sometimes, so they become more brittle. Sometimes, in your case, there was a big cavity. So now you've had a tooth that has a big filling in it. And I don't know if you had the crown done or not on the tooth. But so sometimes associated with teeth that have had root canals, they have these underlining issues, maybe a crack, a big filling, a crown, and all those things can lead to failure as well. So, but to answer your question specifically, there's no specific timeline on a tooth that's had a root canal. It depends on that particular tooth. And again, I find that sometimes these root canal teeth ended up getting a crack, or maybe had a crack from the very beginning, and they lead to failure that way.
James, thanks a lot for the call. We need to take a break here. We're joined on this Medical Monday by Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we'll check the email bag in a moment. Vox Pop, Medical Monday, Ray Graff with you. We're joined today by Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. And let's check a few emails here, Doctor. This one's from Mark. Mark writes, there's a lot of information coming out about nutrition and the effect of a lack of vitamins and minerals on the human body. Bleeding gums can be a sign of many things, but if everything else is ruled out, could it be that bleeding gums might just be caused by a nutrient deficiency, something that could be fixed with a healthier diet? And that is from Mark.
Yes. Hi, Ray. Can you hear me? I apologize.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, nutrients is important. And so bleeding gums typically associated with periodontitis, okay? So your mouth is connected to the rest of your body. So nutrients play an important role in overall oral health in general, but specifically with bleeding gums, we'll put it more with periodontal disease. So vitamin C, for instance, is important. So there was a recent article where there was concern with too much orange juice and that it was too acidic. Well, you know, what comes with that is moderation. So, you know, vitamin C is important. It helps prevent periodontitis. Don't be too concerned with some of the things you read in the media where it may cause you to avoid them, where that's just in high doses. So in general, it's very good for you. Vitamin K, dietarily try to get it. You could do, supplements for some of these things too. In upstate New York, sometimes, vitamin D can be a challenge, but calcium is important, as a lot of people know, cheeses and milks. It is very important, much like it is to almost every discipline of health. But I would say in general, if your gums are bleeding, there's probably more to the story than just nutrition.
That makes sense.
So, but if you're going to the dentist and they're, you're flossing and you're taking good care of your teeth, that can certainly play a role. So yes, absolutely, it's important.
This email from Sandra, and Sandra writes, I know there are privacy issues, but could you comment on whether you believe dentists and their chairside staff should be fully vaccinated?
Well, yeah, so, I mean, I believe that it's important, okay? I think that it's an important way to protect yourself and your family. It is recently in the news that dental offices could turn away patients who are not, and that was essentially based around if they have maybe some high-risk employees or staff or themselves who might be more susceptible. We treat people. We're close to their mouth. We know that the mouth is a source of entry to the body for SARS and COVID. So I think it's important. It's not a mandate within New York State that everybody is. At our office, we think it's important. But we're seeing patients who are not, but we feel comfortable in our infection control and our office processes where we feel that we can keep ourselves and our other patients safe. So yes, I think it is important. I think people have the right to ask, but it's not at this point, it's not a mandate that everyone has to be.
All right, one more email, Doctor, and then we'll hit the phones again for the home stretch. This one's from George, and George writes, my wife has upper dentures and her gums are receding. What can be done?
I'm going to make the assumption that, from an upper denture, it could be a full denture, right, where there aren't any teeth left, or there could be a partial denture where you have, it hooks onto some of your existing teeth. I think, and I'm going to guess, that she's referring to a full denture, and probably there's some shrinkage maybe of the bone and the gum, and it's starting to get loose. I'm making some inferences on the email, but if people who have had, let's say, an upper denture for a long time, they still come in and say, geez, my gums are shrinking is what they'll say. And it's starting to get loose. You can do, there's kind of two things. You can do what's called a denture reline sometimes, where if the teeth they're happy with the teeth and they're functioning and they're chewing okay, you can do a reline where you reline you fill in the gaps on the underside of the denture. Typically, we send it to a lab. It takes a day or so for them to do that. Alternatively, you may decide to make a new denture. I mean, there is, sometimes the denture teeth will get worn, and sometimes it's just time for a new one.
Let's go back to the phones with Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes. The number is 800-348-2551. Barb is in LaGrangeville. Hi, Barb. You're on.
Hi. Thank you. I have a question about wisdom teeth. I got the two on my right side out in my 20s, but 40 years later, I still have the two on the left, and they're not bothering me. I take good care of my teeth. I see my dentist twice a year, but he's sort of indicated that they might be problematic down the road. Should I consider getting them out or just wait till I have a problem?
Well, you know, in general, there's a risk to any surgical procedure. Okay, so in cases like this, it's always a risk reward, and I can't tell you the relative risk with your specific case. You have, you know, the X-ray would tell the whole story. Where are they positioned? You know, again, they don't bother you. Sometimes wisdom teeth are partially erupted through the gum, which down the road that can lead to inflammation, future infection. So every case is different. But I guess your dentist should be able to articulate to you the risks of keeping them. You know, what are the pitfalls of them being there? And then, you know, does that outweigh, you know, just the general risk of having them removed? And risk is, again, relative to where they're positioned. Are they close to a nerve on the bottom? You know, where are they? Think, you know, so those different factors play a role. So I can't tell you specifically on yours, but you could ask, you know, what, you know, the pros and cons of retaining them versus having them out. And then again, it's a risk versus reward that you have to compare.
Barb, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to beautiful Mount Kisco, New York. Audrey, you're on.
Thank you. Hi, I'd like to know if you have experience with people using a mouth guard for sleep apnea as they also use Invisalign retainers. I am currently using Invisalign retainer for sleep and have been contemplating a mouth guard, and I'm wondering if they can be used together.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so with regard to sleep apnea, there's been a lot of success, and the literature supports on different appliances, oral appliances, like as opposed to the CPAP machine, that can open your airway and treat sleep apnea that way. With Invisalign, when you wear your aligners, you're actively moving teeth, right? So they're changing, and you're changing out your aligner every so often. So they would be difficult to wear to be done concurrently, because as plus for your aligners to be most effective, you're keeping them in, you know, ideally 22 hours a day. So, you know, I would say you finish the course of the orthodontic treatment with the aligners, and then the teeth are going to be in their final position. And then at that point you would have, you know, a sleep apnea, appliance fabricated. So I think it would be tough to do them concurrently because your teeth are moving when you're doing the Invisalign.
I understand what you're saying, except that I have finished all of my treatments, and what I wear now are Invisalign only for nighttime.
Oh, the retainers.
Not
okay.
Just, right.
Right. Yeah, it's gonna act the same way. I mean, frankly, if you depending on the type of appliance, but yeah, they'll keep those teeth positioned. I mean, it can act in the same way.
Okay.
You know, there are other types. There's also fixed type retainers that you can do. So then your dentist can talk to you about those. But yeah, I think if you're looking for an alternative to CPAP, and you know, even it can certainly be effective. And I don't believe that simply using that, your teeth are not going to be retained, and you'll have to kind of restraighten them out with Invisalign down the road or anything.
Audrey, thanks so much for the call. We are joined today by Dr. David Mottola. The number is 800-348-2551. John is in Albany. John.
Yeah, hi, doctor. I was wondering, about 5 years ago, my wife had the titanium implant put in, but we didn't do the crown, and 5 years later, is it too late to put the crown in?
Well, not necessarily, no. I mean, so the implant itself is going to sit in the bone up under the gum there. So what you would have to do is called you have to access the implant. So that can be done. You know, usually the oral surgeon or the general dentist, whoever put the implant in, should be able to go and access it. They put what's called a healing cap on it to keep the gum from growing over it. And then, you know, as long as you have the information as the type of implant that it could be restored. So, you know, I certainly think it's a viable option to still be able to put the crown on it. You'd have to go back and have them uncover it is the term that we use. But.
Now, this was done in Chicago, so is there, you know, would that present a problem for
well,
somebody
that's,
here?
It's all, well, anybody, so as long as they know the type of implant, so, you know, wherever the dentist you are now, they might be able to refer you to oral surgeon to do the procedure of uncovering it. They would just have to know the type of implant that they used, okay. that they placed, and then they could put the corresponding parts to put the crown on.
John, thanks a lot for
you
the
can
call.
Do it.
Why titanium? That's expensive stuff. Didn't they make the SR-71 spy plane out of those things?
You know, it's been around for many years, and the literature really supports it. But titanium, it doesn't break, it doesn't decay. It's you know biocompatible, so it's a very good material. Now they are using, but it's metal. There are some zirconia based implants now. The literature haven't been around so long. So the long-term studies on them, aren't there yet. But yeah, titanium has been a tried-and-true material. And, again, they're as I said earlier, they're very successful, and long-term prognosis is good.
Dr.
So they've worked.
Dr. David Mottola joins us on this Medical Monday. And Mary Beth is in Wallkill. Mary Beth, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I am 42 years old, and I have a root canal that is no longer viable. The tooth absolutely needs to be pulled. They have indicated that there is a fair amount of bone loss, they said. And they're giving me the option of a bridge or an implant. I'm kind of taking money out of the equation just because I want to make the best decision. What would you Right. recommend a patient in this situation?
Well, all things being equal, I prefer the implant to a bridge. And this, okay. So the listeners know, when we say bridge, it's not something that's removable. It's something that's cemented in. And what happens is the neighboring teeth on either side of the missing tooth, right, the tooth that will be missing on either side are going to get crowns, and they're all connected and cemented in.
Yes.
The downside with a fixed bridge. Right. So the downside with the bridge okay. is, one, you have to trim down the healthy teeth, okay, on either side to receive crowns. Secondly, it's a higher failure rate because if either one of those two teeth, or if there's more teeth involved sometimes, were to fail, oftentimes the whole bridge will fail. So statistically speaking, the implants have a longer lifespan than the bridge, whereas the implant, it doesn't involve the neighboring teeth. And they frankly statistically last longer than the bridge does. So now certain circumstances, I will say sometimes I do recommend a bridge, maybe if the teeth on either side already need crowns, or there's sometimes you can't place an implant due to bone or you know, science, you know, there could be different issues, but in general, I would prefer the implant.
All right. Thank you. That helped me make my decision. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for the call. And we go now to Dina in Hopewell Junction, or is it Dinah?
It's Dina. Thank you.
You're on. Go ahead.
Quickly, fluoride in toothpaste. I've heard pros and cons. Do you have a quick answer?
Fluoride.
Well, I support it. The literature does support fluoride in the toothpaste as preventing cavities. There's a certainly an optimal amount, but yes, for adults as well, not just kids, but for adults, we recommend fluoride in the toothpaste, and it's going to strengthen the teeth and help prevent cavities. So that's the bottom line why we like it. And they the manufacturers, you know, put the optimal amount in so that, you know, we're not concerned with too much ingesting too much fluoride or anything like that.
Even if it's in your water supply?
So, well, yeah, so for kids, yeah, I mean, water supply and if there's fluoride in the water is relative, but we still recommend a fluoride toothpaste. So what would come into play with fluoride in the water and that would be the fluoride supplements. So for kids who don't have off a well or something like that, you don't have fluoride in the drinking water, then oftentimes we'll recommend a fluoride supplement. But across the board, whether there's fluoride in the water or not, we recommend fluoride in the toothpaste. And the studies have shown that seems to be effective in strengthening the teeth and preventing cavity tooth decay.
Dina, thanks a lot. Now, we only have about 45 seconds here with Dr. David Mottola, but we – oops, wrong button. Sorry, we'll try this one. Joanna, you have about 15 seconds to pose the question.
Okay, really quickly. There are aisles and aisles of toothpaste and also mouthwashes. Is it all just hype, or is there something to really look for that's most helpful?
Well, number one thing is fluoride in the toothpaste, okay? But some of those can be effective, like sensitivity toothpaste. They have different enzymes and things in there that help build barriers over, like, gum recession over the root of the tooth and things like that. Whereas, no, they are for real. That sensitivity toothpaste can be effective for sure. And the whitening toothpaste, they do have some peroxide and other things in them that help, you know, they won't bleach the teeth, but sometimes they'll take off surface stain. So it's not all hype. You know, they're very good marketers and, and some of it, you know, is probably over the top, but for the most part, you know, fluoride in your toothpaste is the number one thing, but no, some of those sensitivity toothpastes certainly can be effective.
Well, doctor, we are done for another episode. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Ray. I really appreciate it. And thank you to the listeners. It's fun.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much. Support comes from the bariatric program at Adirondack Health, Saranac Lake, offering weight loss surgery and lifestyle education. Better health, better lives, AdirondackHealth.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the great calls and emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Joe Makowicz screened the calls, as he does almost every Monday. And I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's birds. Richard P. Guthrie flies in again here to Studio A. Join us for the mayhem that can only be a Rich Guthrie appearance tomorrow at 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.